Connection brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church. Another opportunity to highlight the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute courses, and we have a return engagement with one of the I'd say more popular instructors for the last session with Bartlesville, and we'll go ahead and talk about that. And I want to make sure I get it right. The topic is the Great Secrets of the D-Day Invasion. And nice to have you back in this morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And I think this is something probably, as I think of films, at least from the World War II genre, there are probably more films somewhere around the D-Day invasion, whether it's The Man Who Never Was, Man of the Gray Flannel Suit, obviously The Longest Day, just so many great films trying to tell that story. And it just can't be done in a couple of hours. You're going to have to take 6 weeks to get the job done, I think.
That's right. We're going to, and I think we're going to have a pretty good time of it. I'm going to play with this one this year. We're going to do it like it's a mystery novel. We're going to look at all the clues and see what happened.
Well, Eisenhower and friends, I think, did a great job in a lot of ways of misdirection, trying to say we could do this, we might do that with troop movements and moving everybody from Patton all around and trying to, well, just not tell the story or tell too many stories to get it all out there.
That's true. And one of the big things about the Normandy invasion is, as we're going to look at it, is there was a lot of deception going on in World War II, which, to the extent the Germans were pretty good at some of their intelligence, they just got the wrong information, and because they had it, they worked on it and made mistakes.
Well, I think that's something that is a observance that many of us can make of the intelligence community in general. You don't have the full story. You have this piece of the puzzle and this piece of the puzzle, but you don't have the front of the puzzle box, so to speak, to look at and try to put it all together.
That's true. And in case of the Normandy invasion, this story is going to begin in 1939. The Germans plan to invade England, and because of that planning, they get ideas about how it's done. Mm-hmm. And they think that when the British decide to come back, they'll do it just exactly the same way, except point a different direction. And things changed in 39 to 44, and the Germans just didn't keep up.
Well, that's going to be, I think, at least for the class participants, the fun part of it, to try to look at it. And I believe, based on at least the paragraph or two that I've got to work with here, that you're going to kind of go into things like risk analysis and try to put together that if they come this way, this is how we respond and that sort of thing?
You bet. One of the things that I've discovered when doing this research and thinking about it is the same kind of problems that caused the Germans to make mistakes in their analysis are the kind of problems that trouble you and I and every businessman in the world or politician when they make decisions. There are just certain human factors that get in the way of getting the right answer.
Mm-hmm. I think you're again, just kind of sitting here trying to extrapolate what I believe you're talking about. That's probably true. Tom, when we look at not only this, but any military campaign, there are so many factors to take in. And at least as a group of allies, we had never done this sort of thing before.
That's true. We hadn't, and beginning with the landings in Africa and the early part of the war, and experience that the United States gained in the Pacific operations and amphibious operations, we were learning. And people don't realize that the invasion of Normandy and the success was a near-run thing. We could very well have been defeated on the beaches.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, I haven't been there, but all of the pictures, all of the accounts that I have read, that was a pretty extensive and fairly well defended area of beach.
Yes, it was, because the Germans knew that the Allies were coming, and they knew they had to land in one of two areas in northern France. The one area in the Pas-de-Calais they defended more heavily. Mm-hmm. But they anticipated a deception in the Normandy, and it was well defended.
Wow.
Field Marshal Rommel was no fool.
No.
And he made good preparations.
And I would think in many respects he was the German version at that time of maybe a more contemporary Storm and Norman Schwarzkopf or something.
You bet. That's exactly right. He was given a special directive and operational authority by Hitler to defend and to control all the defenses of Normandy and do the planning, with the idea that when the attack came, he would have operational control of the sector.
Historically, we hear that Hitler was well involved in many of the military decisions. He wanted it done a certain way. How much freedom did he really give Rommel?
He gave Rommel a great deal of freedom with preparation of what I call the hard defenses, the fortresses, the gun batteries, the mines, the mine fields, the beach obstacles. But when it came to the actual control of the forces, he exercised a control that gave Rommel no real flexibility.
So not unlike a lot of campaigns where if the military generals were running it one way, we might have been more successful than the fact that we have a civilian leadership of our military.
Could be. But in this case, we've got to remember one thing. The Allies wanted the Germans to believe that they were going to land in the Pas-de-Calais. And the deception operations and the defenses were focused in that area. Hitler knew that was coming, and that's where he thought it would come. And he had projected or predicted that there would be diversionary attacks designed to draw forces out of the heavily defended areas, and he said they would come in Normandy. So when the real attack came in Normandy, they thought it was a diversion. And so in a way, Hitler wisely was not going to be drawn into the trap of moving his forces from the best defended area into a ancillary fighting. The only problem is it was well over a month after the landings that they finally figured out there's only going to be one landing, and it was in Normandy.
Through the 6 weeks of the course, and I know you and I talked last time that you were on for your fall semester OLLI course, you have taught at Air War College and other military preparation courses for generals, for leadership staff. So you bring a special talent at bringing some of this down to civilian level.
I hope I do. I have had an opportunity in my career to, one, I was a intelligence officer during the Vietnam era, and for 2 years I was at the Pentagon, and I was the Middle East and current intelligence desk officer. I did the daily briefings of the general officers with regard to the Middle East. I also, in 86 through 91, attended special conferences at the Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and did work and research and presentations on intelligence, deception, and surprise.
So the presentations that you're going to be making on the D-Day invasion, maybe not for the purposes of this course, but this is by no means your first look at this information.
No, this is background work. In fact, this course that we're going to do coming in February is based on a thesis I wrote at the Defense Intelligence School in 1969, which was designed to take a look at what was then the secret behind the surprise in Vietnam at Tet, compare it with the surprise at Pearl Harbor, and then, because I had to work in a new area, I picked the surprise of the Germans at Normandy as my thesis and wrote a 300-page thesis in the year I was at the Defense Intelligence School.
Wow. So, and most people who write that type of work continue to update their work. You didn't stop the project, then you've gone back and maybe picked up additional documentation.
Yes, I did additional work starting in 86, which was more in the analytical, making sense out of the facts. But The factual background that we will study was essentially, I gathered all that in 1969 because at that time I was in District of Columbia at Anacostia, and all of the German military documents were downtown at the National Archives, and I had access over a three-month period to go down and get the original documents, review them, and talk to the men who had been the conservators of those documents since 1947.
Wow. So if not firsthand information, the next best thing to it.
You bet.
Yeah, all right. We're going to continue our time with Tom Cubbage and informing you on the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, the great secrets of the D-Day invasion. Of course, it will be taught Wednesday afternoons, starting in just about 10 days or so. We will continue with Tom coming up in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1, and again, the name of the course, The Great Secrets of the D-Day Invasion, and military historian Tom Cubbage with us this morning. And Tom, you and I have talked primarily the facts of history, the what happened or the lessons that were learned from the D-Day invasion, but you told me that just briefly that you kind of want to look at this as a business model, and I don't know if I can use the Japanese business is war is business sort of thing, but it sounds as though it applies.
Well, it does, and I've come to understand that part of the problem that one has to look at, whether you're talking about American intelligence or German intelligence, is what kind of organizational structure have you put in place to gather and analyze the intelligence, and what kind of people are using the data, what kind of people are gathering the data, and are certain individuals, because of their positions, influencing the way the data goes? And wow, we here today, is someone cooking the books, as they call it today?
Yeah.
But we'll look at the German model and see where the model itself failed.
With all of the data being collected by businesses large and small, I mean, nearly every business has some sort of a email marketing program or a text marketing program or some way that they are gathering information on their customers.
Right.
And we want to know more about you. We want to know your shopping habits. We want to know your brand preferences. And I'm sure that all somehow applies into what you're going to be talking about.
You bet it did. It's all intelligence collection for business purposes. We have to know who the market is. We have to know not only who the market is whether that actual market has the money to buy the product.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a price point that's right? Do we have access to our product as easy? And if we don't have that information, then no matter how important we think our business is, it's not going to succeed.
Sure. Just looking at what you and I are doing right now, I don't have the time and don't really want to get into it because I'm not the topic, but you know, as a radio station, a music format, for instance, over on K1, we are aimed at a certain age, gender, demographic, someone who likes this sort of thing. Generally, it may be a 35 plus female audience or something like that. Country may have a slightly different audience that we're aimed at, but just within what you and I are doing right now, radio broadcasting, we are aimed at a certain audience that, number one, wants to find out more about what you're doing.
Right. Well, in this case, the real audience, as far as the Germans were concerned, strangely enough, was one man. It was Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And the British, they had a product to sell, and that was deception. And they knew what Hitler anticipated. And so the whole deception operation was designed to reinforce his assumptions and presumptions so that he would act in a way that would be beneficial to them.
If you know what your customer wants, give it to them.
Give it to him. And the British did, because the British had captured at least, well, we think there were about 17 German agents parachuted into Britain. Six of them were captured and became double agents. The others were tried and hanged. And those six became working for the British intelligence, and British intelligence people cleverly created spy networks that these people recruited so that they would get bits of information from every part of England and the military. And they would create this giant fiction and send the information. And then because the German code was broken, British intelligence also could read the code information sent from the spy collectors to the headquarters to see how their deception story was being received and believed.
So command, control, communications, the Enigma machine, all of those things going into finding out more about what this man wants to know.
It's exactly right. This is just one giant puzzle, and hopefully we're going to put these pieces together and see how the interplay led to the final result.
Sounds as though to me you've got two basic goals that you want to accomplish, and my words, not yours, in this course. Number one, make sure we all know the same history. And then number two, how we can apply that to a decision-making process.
Exactly right. And this is a period of time, the so-called greatest generation, when the history of World War II in Europe is an exciting subject. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of very interesting details. And in fact, as we watch television today, we see documentary after documentary that brings some of those details to the fore. And I just want to be a part of that.
Well, and I am seeing some of those documentaries that are bringing out facts that, at least to me, were not part of what I learned in high school history. I'll say that.
That's exactly correct.
And so part of it is just bringing out those interesting facts along the way that makes us a better person to appreciate what has gone before us.
I think that's it. We want to understand so that the people will see not only how the facts developed, but how they changed over time, and it became a ongoing story that had an outcome that, in our case, as the Allies, was favorable.
Will you talk about some of the, and I'm sure there were some, mistakes that we made along the way, misinterpreting a signal somewhere intelligence-wise?
Well, we will talk somewhat about that. Most of the problems we made were in the security, keeping the big secret, because the secret that the Germans had to find was where would the main landing come and when. And there were some big security lapses that could have tipped off the Germans, and they basically, in hindsight, were interesting and not intentional, but just ordinary lapses of human activity.
Well, weren't we ready to go a month or two before the actual invasion, but due to weather and other things that there were simply said, no, we got to wait a month for the next new moon or whatever?
Well, what we did, in a way, that would happen, but what was really happening is this invasion was so large, and we needed so many of the, what we call now the landing ship tanks, LSTs, that it was not possible to do it any earlier in the strength that was done.
Okay.
Because we had to wait for the next four or five or six ships. And then in a training exercise in preparation, three LSTs were lost to a chance encounter in the channel as a part of the training SI. Wow. With German snowboats that sank them. And so it was a point.
Well, the course will be offered Wednesday afternoons, 1 to 3 o'clock, starting February 10th at Arvest Eastside Branch. That's a facility that has worked well for you in the past.
It has. It's a good venue, and I'm having some large-scale maps made so that we'll be able to visualize what was going on where.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about the large cast of characters, the German officers involved. They're an interesting group, and actually quite competent in many areas.
Yeah, I think that's if you underestimate your enemy, you're definitely in trouble.
So, you bet.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a fun course, I think, for anyone who wants to or is already a student of history, and how we can learn from those mistakes and learn along the way.
And we're also going to have the ability to let the class participate, because last time I learned that sometimes questions from the class lead us down more interesting paths.
Exactly. As a teacher, you'll be taught. There is an event this Sunday, downtown Bartlesville, at the Haskell Event Space, and the instructors will kind of give a short presentation if you'd like to find out more.
I hope they come.
I hope so, too. Tom Cubbage with us this morning on a Community Connection on AM 1400 K1, the Osher Lifelong Learning Series of Classes. And just go online to education.okstate.edu/Ollie for more information, or meet us downtown Sunday afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. News on the way next.
ONN News, I'm Randy Renner. Oklahoma City-based.